Now, stay tuned. We have the first hour of the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show on KSCO. Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Mrs. Future.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Bobby Wilder in San Francisco.
Good afternoon.
All right. Yeah. We're going to have Bruce Damer coming on at 3 because of all the exciting space news and space dust coming back to the Earth.
Isn't
that fun? So we'll be looking a little bit more in depth about our space news in the second hour today.
Yeah, and I've sure been enjoying the sky this last week. We went out asteroid spotting, or I guess meteor spotting, this a few days ago. That was really fun.
Oh, yes.
The tail of the comet.
The Geminids, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, did you see some?
Oh, we saw a lot.
Yeah.
My brother saw 17, I believe. I saw about a dozen.
Yeah.
I was not as long. It's a little cold out there.
Yes.
I think ideally would be to be able to sit in the hot tub and watch the sky. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely worthwhile checking out. I think it was on last night and there'll be some tonight, but not nearly as much. So in this hour, I think we'll cover some of the other news besides the space news. Like, for example,
the earthquake this morning.
The earthquake this morning. Yeah, that was something, huh?
Yeah.
Was it a 3.5 earthquake?
Well, there were two in quick succession that I felt. And the first one was a 3.7, and it was in Morgan Hill. And then the next one was a 3.5. It was at 6:59:41 seconds. Okay. At the USGS, they have the earthquakes listed by when they went off. And in a one-second period, we had two in Morgan Hill and one in Puerto Rico.
No, that wasn't the Puerto Rico one. I don't think that's the one we were paying attention to. Morgan Hill sounds like the one.
We did the Morgan Hill one. But there were two in Morgan Hill, 1 second apart. And I felt them both.
Wow.
Yeah, it's exciting living in California.
Yeah. the house starts shaking and you kind of wait to see how long it's going to keep shaking and then it stops and you breathe a sigh of relief.
Yeah. The other news, the Santa Cruz area now has the first vaccines. They've just arrived.
Oh, right. The FedEx trucks came in this morning, huh?
That's right. The first ones arrived.
Yeah. What do you know about them?
A shipment was received this morning and it would be given to frontline healthcare workers.
Who want them?
But the doses,
I guess for them it's mandatory.
Start tomorrow. That's the Pfizer BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine.
Yeah. You know, that article that we just heard on the Town Hall News about how many healthcare workers are quitting. They only told the side of the story about the healthcare workers who are quitting because of their burnout, because they've treated so many people and it's so devastating. But they didn't talk about the people who are quitting because they don't want to be getting vaccinated with this rush to experimental vaccine. They may believe in vaccines, but they may want to wait on this particular
one. We'll see how it goes initially. Mm-hmm. Well, the first ones to get it here will be at the Watsonville and Dominican hospitals, the Pfizer vaccine.
Right.
The Dominican Hospital Emergency Department will probably see it first. Stay tuned. We'll find out how it goes.
Yeah.
We'll see how the first-line responders respond to the vaccine. You know, it was interesting. I was reading about it, that how the fundamental structure of the vaccine was figured out the first week after they had gotten the DNA.
Yeah, there's really hardly enough focus on how much AIs and computers have increased the ability for researchers to know exactly what they should target.
That's mostly the efficacy and safety issues that take so much time.
Yes, and there's a good reason for that, because every human being who interacts with these drugs has their own history of results that needs to be monitored. We're not all the same.
Right. Last week, Bobby, you were saying that you were going to wait until, maybe not taking the mRNA vaccines, but wait until the more classical vaccines are available.
Yeah.
Fly to England, I think. Yeah, Oxford.
These are traditional cold viruses, the adenoviruses that are, what they do is they grab the chimpanzee version, which the humans don't react as, they don't succumb to the cold of the adenovirus that the chimpanzees do. Ah. It's kind of new to the human system and allows that virus to go into the cell. And instead of having the adeno cold virus, they put in the SARS-CoV-2 virus in the nucleus of that, and then it triggers the whole immune system to respond to that. So that's a traditional way of doing it. And usually those things take maybe a decade.
A lot longer.
Yeah. But they have new tools now, so they're coming out with faster ones. It's interesting. It seems like what Mrs. Future was saying is that a lot of the health workers, a third of them, like the nurses and frontline workers, and even doctors, almost a third of the doctors are saying, you know, they want to wait and see. Like, they don't want to be the first ones, but they like watch this first round and see and make a decision. And then there's a third of them that says, absolutely not. And then there's a third that's ready to line up and get the shot immediately.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like maybe in the middle there. I kind of like wait and see, personally.
Well, for I'm just in the school of boosting my immune system. I want to have a robust immune system. And then that makes me think that I don't need to boost my immune system by stimulating it with something that's going to cause me to generate antibodies. If I need to generate the antibodies because I actually come down with something, that's one thing. But I don't need to jump the gun, vaccinating or inoculating or doing anything outside of what nature would deal me.
Yeah, you trust the natural immunization more than anything.
I'm interested in robust immune system.
Yeah, vitamin D, vitamin C.
Right. Yeah. Health. Yeah. Health as opposed to minimizing sickness.
Yeah. All right, we're very good.
Yeah, I agree. I think we've kind of been fed a lot of fear and we don't know what to do. And we're just like, we're just going to get down on our knees and say, line me up and shoot me in the arm as fast as we can. And that's working for most of the public out there. But for me, you know, I think there's a lot of options that will be coming up. And we have a lot of time. You have a lot of time to think about this. Like, you and I are not going to get any of these shots until April or May.
You know? Right.
Or so ever.
You get to see what happens.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back to the show. In other news, very interesting. We have a local company called Joby Aviation that's creating one of the first vertical takeoff and landing air taxi services. Well, Uber, you all heard of Uber, of course, has offloaded its air taxi enterprise service Elevate to Joby.
Really?
Yeah.
They're going local, huh?
Well, actually, Uber's investing $75 million in our local company, Joby, and an expanded partnership with them. And Uber and Joby will be working together for their all-electric vertical takeoff and landing passenger aircraft.
Well, congratulations, Joe Ben. That's got to feel good. Get a little Uber money in there.
Right. Well, $75 million, not too shabby.
Mm-hmm.
Coming in, they also had $50 million investment earlier this year as well. And to date, Joby Aviation has raised about $820 million, with Uber talking about $125 million commitment to them totally.
Wow. For a flying car company, I guess that's a good drop in the water.
They are serious players in the market now. They're connected not just with the technology, but with the buyer of the technology, meaning Uber will use the technology for their taxi service.
That's great. Their first customer.
So to speak, one of the groups that has a stake in the company itself.
Mm-hmm. That's really great. Flying taxis. We're almost to the future.
Not to be left behind, Amazon has unveiled their new self-driving car. We mentioned that last week. They're going to reveal it. Now it's been officially revealed, Amazon's first robo-taxi called Zoox, Z-O-O-X. It's pretty cool. It's kind of a carriage, like a carriage-style vehicle with doors that open in the middle. It holds four people, one row of seats on the left and one row of seats on the right, and they're facing each other, kind of like in a train.
Yeah, sort of like a box. It's a box with wheels and four seats inside. Two of them are backwards as the car goes forward. Back to the view.
Right. I know there's little train compartments, you know.
Yeah.
Only a little bit more comfortable seats with the rechargeable setups for
your phone. Lots of glass. And you can definitely look out the window.
Yeah. It can go either direction, left or right. And it apparently can go...
Oh, yeah. Some people are calling it the push me, pull you.
Not only that, but it also apparently can go side to side as well. I don't
really?
See how
it works. That should make parallel parking easier.
Yeah, left and right. There's no wheel, no driver wheel. Either side looks the same. What they're really good at is tricky U-turns and tight curbside pickups.
Sounds great.
And it also will go up to 75 miles an hour.
Okay.
So we're talking speed here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty tight in the city.
Yeah, 75 in San Francisco, that'd be something.
Jeez.
It's got a bunch of LiDAR pucks on its roof, six of them, radar sensors, cameras, 270-degree view of each corner, which theoretically eliminates blind spots. They have redundancy so that in case one sensor fails, they have another one to replace it. And they can see objects up to 150 meters away.
Mm. So here come the autonomous cars. Or in this case, the autonomous taxis.
Yeah, the ceiling has a starry sky pattern like you see in a Rolls Royce. Rolls Royce ghosts have nice patterns on the roof.
Uh-huh.
And there's a touchscreen at each seat, the small touchscreen. That's to control your music, air conditioning, or see the route that you're on, that sort of thing. I guess the equivalent of the...
Everybody can plug in their own headphones.
Yeah, kind of like in an airplane, I would imagine. But on the seat... It looks very pragmatic. It's got a big battery pack, a 133-kilowatt battery pack that will allow it to go for 16 hours without recharging.
So who's using these cars? Does it say? Is it a commercial service?
Well, you see, once again, it's teamwork between a company called Zooks and Amazon, who had bought Zooks.
Oh, so can Amazon's call Zooks use them and order them?
Not yet, no.
It's not like a taxi service yet.
No. As a matter of fact, given that Amazon is so involved, it's obviously going to go in the direction of electric delivery vans.
Oh, I see. So they're going to be delivering couriers with packages?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's there's a ton of money in that. But I do think that they will be pursuing public transport as well. It's just that it's a little bit more complicated with people because you've got to deal with health considerations of your payloads more compared to a freight truck. Humans are much more delicate organisms to be protected. So we have to be more careful, especially with autonomous vehicles, where who knows what they might do sometimes. You know, they got to work out all the bugs for people to really trust them. Mm-hmm. Well, we might trust our freight with them initially.
Yep. I'm just waiting for the whole thing to be autonomous robots delivering packages. And where will all the people go? The people won't have anything to do anymore.
Well, that's the thing, is that we do have to figure out what we're going to do with ourselves and what all these things take over. Humans are going to be good for something.
Well, I'm sure we're going to be doing things that we haven't thought of yet.
Well, that's
things
the
we've
key.
Been hoping to get to.
You're very clever. We like fun a lot. We'll figure out stuff that the machines never think of because they're just dutifully doing their thing. We don't do that. We don't dutifully do our thing the way machines do. It's not in our nature. It's more in our nature to experiment and have fun and figure out new stuff.
Very revealing.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Revealing? Yeah, I suppose. But it is our gift, right? It's our gift to not to be just a robot.
That's right. We get to be creative, original thinkers and doers.
Yeah, like Chinese, for example, just announced a photonic quantum computer that demonstrates quantum supremacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it surpassed last year's Google's quantum computer.
Yeah, I guess they're in competition with Google now for quantum supremacy, huh?
Yeah. It works on a totally different line of physics. Instead of working on super-cooled
Element, right?
It's light-based. And what it was there was a couple Chinese scientists that were studying under this Austrian professor in Austria. And they had produced in Austria three lasers that came together and they could get entanglement and produce, it's just like a three-qubit type thing. So it was very minimal. So what the Chinese, when they went back, they said, well, they expanded on that idea and they added 50 of these lasers. And so it's on this table and you see all these lenses, 50 of them pointing toward the center, and they're all trying to entangle at the same time. So they were successful in getting it to work. But there's no programming yet. You can't really apply it to anything.
You turn it on, but it doesn't do anything.
Well, no. I mean, there's no...
Well, it solves one problem.
Boson sampling, yes. Right?
Right. It does one thing only. It does boson sampling. It can't do anything else.
Yes.
but it does that really fast at the speed of light.
It does. And it can do what a traditional supercomputer, it would take 2.5 billion years for the fastest supercomputer we have.
2.5 billion years, right.
To do the same calculation that it did in 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable in terms of the speed. But it's a very specific problem that it can do that with. And that's
right.
Yeah, the only thing you can look at is things that are the size of a boson.
And in case you're wondering, boson sampling is a means of calculating the output of a straight line optical circuit that has multiple inputs and outputs.
Oh, well, thanks for straightening that out.
I thought you'd like to know that.
Yeah, I like to know the details.
Well, you get to create a machine in which photons are sent into a circuit in parallel, and once inside, they're split by beam
splits. I just think it's hilarious that the fastest supercomputer in the world can only deal with bosons. There's just something about that sounds so appropriate.
It can deal with them really fast. Those boson quarks, I tell you. I suppose Google's now going to respond to this and come up with a version next.
Yeah.
I'm surprised, right? Mm.
I think there should be research into quantum light, like what they're doing there.
Quantum light.
Well, what they're trying to do is get these lasers down to a chip.
15 seconds.
So I think if you could have one of these in your cell phone or a desktop computer or something. That's what they're... And you don't need cryogenics like you do
for room temperature. Temperature super quantum computing.
Well, it turns everything into light and the whole game changes. It's not chemistry anymore. It's color.
Yeah.
Sounds like fun.
Right.
Next generation iPhones. Not. It'll be a while before that happens, but probably will. Optical circuits. All right. Well, we'll be back right after the break. You're listening to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show with Bobby Wilder in San Francisco. And some more fun stories to share with you. Hey, welcome back to the show. Yes, in terms of fun gadgets, I don't know if I'd get this for anybody for Christmas, but I thought it was fun. The world's first DNA tricorder in your pocket. DNA tricorder.
Unpacked. This is not sci-fi.
No, this is real. Cold Springs Harbor Labs scientists have developed the world's first mobile genome sequence analyzer. It's an iPhone app called iGenomics, iGenomics. And by pairing an iPhone with a handheld DNA sequencer, you essentially have a mobile genetics lab. And that's where the...
I just wouldn't know what to do with a mobile genetics lab.
Well, it's because you're not Dr. McCoy. You know, what do you do with a tricorder? There's a lot of things you... In this case, I don't think even in Star Trek, they were actually analyzing the DNA of the aliens they were looking at. They would just say, life form 300 feet away seems to be biological. But this would be able to...
Well, it says it's useful for pandemic and ecology workers.
Sure.
So I guess you can analyze aspects of the pandemic.
With a handheld DNA sequencer, you could sequence anything that has DNA in it.
Yeah, I think last week we had a link about how they're... was a company developing a test that you could use your iPhone to do some of this genomic analyzing and looking for the virus.
Yeah, you could see if that... Oh, let me check your mRNA.
Yeah. Well, it's better than sticking a swab up your nose, right? At least it feels better. I don't know if either of them is that accurate, but...
Yeah.
I would certainly choose the external non-invasive version.
Yeah, I would too. Yeah.
If the results were reliable.
Just a prick. I just need a little bit of skin cells. Yeah, just a small amount of skin for this. The thing is that these sequencers got really small as a technology, but there weren't any technologies around that you could then take the information from the sequencers and analyze it and look at it other than high-end laptops.
Uh-huh. So the sensors could pick up on the DNA, but you didn't have enough computing power to make sense of it?
You needed a high-end laptop in order to make sense out of it, so you had to carry that around. But the breakthrough here is that there's an app now so that instead of a high-end computer, you can use your iPhone for doing the same thing. Turn down Bobby's mic on there, will you?
Okay, yeah. Bobby, you're splashing around or whatever. We're potting you down.
Making lunch.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, but just mute it when things are going on in the background there.
Oh.
Yeah, we pick up everything. People even know when you're eating sushi or chips, you know. It's very easy.
Power of radio. I had to make some coffee.
Coffee. Yeah, there you go. I should have known. My AI knew, but I didn't. Thanks for that update. So the DNA sequencer is very small. We needed a smaller computer to associate with it. The iPhone now has an app called iGenomics. So if you want to go around sequencing stuff and be a giga scientist with the DNA, you now can.
Apparently, this device was reviewed in the journal GigaScience, and the inventors reported that the algorithm could quickly map the DNA sequences of a couple of viral pathogens, such as the flu virus or the Zika virus. Mm. It could also identify some mutations that were useful for diagnosing it and treating it.
Well, how do you isolate a viral genome?
Well, good you ask. Apparently, they provide an online tutorial for analyzing viral genomes.
Oh, very good. Wow.
Including one for a SARS-CoV-2 patient.
So you could actually...
That doesn't mean COVID-19. It just means SARS-CoV-2, which could be any coronavirus.
It's got to be a collection process, probably a little more complicated than... I just cough in my iPhone. Though that's not that far-fetched either, considering the software that allows you to analyze your cough. To ascertain what kind of problem you might have.
So this is a real nerd kind of victory here. The inventors, Palatnik and Schatz, are talking about how we all are comfortable carrying cameras in our pockets, and so they think that it's not that hard to imagine that in the next couple of years, we'll all want to be carrying our own DNA sequence.
DNA sequencer?
Let me try and say that three times fast. Yes, DNA sequencer on our smartphone so that we can check out little things in our environment.
Well, yes. I think somebody has to write a book about DNA sequencing for dummies.
There you go. That'd be a good place for me to start.
Next big hobby. Yeah, because you stop and think about it, anything could be DNA sequenced that's alive,
right?
From butterflies to your favorite flowers.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, well, I'm sure it beats a microscope.
Yeah. And then understanding it. And, you know, well, I guess, you know, who really the pioneers in that have probably been like the companies that do your hereditary DNA, mm-hmm. 23andMe, Ancestry, 23andMe, especially with all the medical information they give you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were talking about last week, Bobby, as well.
Oh, the viome? Yeah.
Yeah, the viome, understanding the DNA that lives in your stomach.
Yeah, it seems like there's 10 times more DNA information in your gut than your whole body has.
Because that's a lot of other organisms live there besides our human DNA.
Right.
And we could sequence their DNA with our own handy dandy DNA sequencer and see what lives there, what the colonies of different organisms actually are in our very own stomach. With your own phone and your DNA sequencer attachment, that really shows you the direction of personalized medicine. Really?
Yeah.
That's sort of the trend of personalized medicine. And after all, it makes sense because we're all different and we have different issues that we need to deal with. So naturally, our tools would tune into what our particular issues are.
Yeah, that personalized medicine era is coming as the tools are developed to give us that level of scrutiny about what's actually wrong with us and then what among the myriad of possible treatments would be most harmonious.
Yeah, get away from...
one drug fits all kind of mentality.
Yeah,
that's a real profit motive kind of medicine as opposed to a real health-oriented kind of medicine.
Well, I guess personalized medicine would get down to not just giving you the right drugs, but the right amounts at the right time. 3.5 milligrams right now.
Yeah.
Two in about 2 hours. you know, stuff like that, which you can't do now, given the current regimens. They're too limited to give you the exact amounts of, say, drugs when you need them, when your body needs them. You know,
and to know interactions, like how drugs interact with foods.
Or with each other, for that matter.
That's right. So does it enhance it or suppress the qualities of a drug that you might be taking?
Yes, so, inhibit interactions. Right, right. Yeah, like if you drink too much water, simply, they can dilute the effects of many of the drugs that you have as well. So the food and water intake affect how things affect your system as well.
Well, yeah, of course, true. Then what this makes me think about is the whole argument for the biological terrain.
Yeah.
When you're focusing on the drug and what the drug can do, that's a little bit of the hammer nail kind of approach to things, right? Mm-hmm. You want that drug to be used appropriately. But if you're focusing on the environmental terrain, you're looking at the ecosystem of the health of the being. And there's so many factors that what you're really looking at is the balance and the healthy expression of all the different players. So it's not like there's one drug that makes everything better. That's like the difference between having enough vitamins to create a healthy immune system versus having one drug to kill any outside invaders. They're two different philosophies of health.
Yeah. Another interesting analogy, I once talked to the father of the modern computer virus. I interviewed him for a book I wrote years ago. And he said something very simply is easy to remember, and it's true today for real viruses and interactions with the environment, that the terrain, as you're saying. He says, you have an organism, you have a virus, and you have the environment that it lives in. And one cannot exist without the other. You have to know your environment in order to survive. And that's true for the most simplest viruses in the computer. They know what kind of computer you're in, or they know what kind of memory they're dealing with. They know how to do something. But if they don't know what environment they're in, they're just going to go away, just die. They won't survive. So all organisms are intimate with their environment in many, many ways, because it's not really separate from them. It's essential for their existence.
Yeah. Well, we're trying to emerge into a new kind of consciousness where we look at things more holistically, where we see things as connected to their holistic environment as opposed to outside of it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. What's your name?
Absolutely.
What's your ecosystem? Who's your daddy?
Well, in wine, they talk at the terroir, which is the terrain, you know, terroir, which is, where did the plants actually grow? Was it a south side hill that's facing the sun, or another? What's the terrain and what's the soil? Everything has everything to do with the flavor of the wine.
Yeah, it's quite an art form.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, life is vast and complex, and we do our best to understand it, but sometimes we oversimplify.
Yeah. I think when you have these neural nets, well, neural sections of your phone, like the new iPhones and Samsung phones, they have the special circuitry that does a little bit of AI and neural net stuff. I think those can be programmed or sent to actually do research like what's happening here with this analysis of your genome. I think that's where some of the better programmers are going to start programming for microbiology kind of stuff.
Yeah, the personalized medicine. We move in the direction of better health through the use of our tools along those lines. It's a natural direction. And I would go there if I was just starting in school today. You know, that'd be a rich area to explore. That and Mars, of course. But that's another chapter. All right, very good. We'll be right back after the break. You're on the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show, and Bobby Wilder, and
the witch doctor, he told me what to do. He told me, ooh.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Yeah, you know, all of us, especially in America, know about the value of superhighways, freeways, that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, the quickest way to get from place to place in a vehicle, like a car.
Like a car, yeah. Yeah, right. And we have them, you know, across the country. It was a big deal during the Eisenhower administration to start building the interstate system. And, well, we're at a point now where we're discovering how to do such a thing in the solar system.
Mm-hmm. Right. We're looking for the fastest way to get from planet to planet, or
from point A to point
planet
B.
To asteroid, right, or comet to ground.
Exactly. And then there's superhighway networks already in place.
That's right.
That we just have to tune into, take advantage of.
We have to discover them, because there are no light posts showing us where they are.
We don't need to pour concrete from Jupiter to Mars.
No, we have to discover them, because they are created by the gravity and orbits of all of the things that exist in our solar system.
They're already there. The fact that all these things are orbiting each other, there are moons swirling around planets and planets swirling around the sun, and there's a lot of motion already. Right. And what are you saying? We can take advantage of all that motion?
We can. In the past, when you think of rocket scientists trying to figure out the best way to get, say, from Earth to the moon, we think of the kind of calculations that involve how far do we need to go, how fast do we need to go, how do we leave so that we have the shortest distance between the Earth and the moon to traverse so it takes the least amount of time.
Yeah.
But since 2001 and the SOHO mission, there has also been a calculation involving the mass of the bodies that affect the orbit of the objects that you find along the way.
How big? You could, like the slingshot effect.
Right, the slingshot effect. And that is literally how gravity adds to the equation and changes the speed of the thing that is picked up by the gravity.
I always thought that was brilliant, that you basically, because of the power of the gravity of the planets, you could use that gravitational force as a slingshot effect to move around the solar system.
Right. And so now what they're doing is they realize how important that slingshot effect is, and they are mapping the jet streams of the solar system. They're mapping where those gravity assistance
fastest ways
energies
to move.
Exist.
Move from A to B might not be a direct path, but through using several of these gravitational effects.
Right. And some of these manifolds, they call them celestial manifolds.
Wait, so that's a weird term. You know, that's a manifold.
Yes. And
I think it's something on a car. A heat manifold. But what are these, celestial manifolds?
Well, they're just called manifolds. Yeah. And these manifolds are gravity jet streams, if you will, right? Mm. They are areas where if you get your rocket into this groove, then it will get natural acceleration assistance from gravity.
Right. Like if you dive in really close to a planet and then curve away really fast, but the gravity will do that to you.
Right.
You know, you just sort of aim in and then pull up at the last minute.
Right.
You go out and you gain power.
Right. So the thing to think about it is that these things exist in the solar system already.
Right.
And they're
just
standing there like a freeway system. And of course, it's changing all the time because all of the positions of the planets are changing all the time.
It's not a linear map.
It's not a linear
map. It's a map in motion. Yeah,
and
more like
everything affects everything.
Right. Really multidimensional GPS navigational system.
Right.
Which is what you would need when you're out in space.
Yeah. But if you can figure out where these space manifolds exist, then you can change the rate of your journey. You can change how fast you get from place to place by just unbelievable amounts. So
we have a flight to Mars via Venus.
Right. So the thing is, they're trying to draw these things so that you can see what they look like in space. You know, they're trying to actually make a map. And it's similar to mapping the winds of the planet or the jet stream or something. I mean, the energies exist, but you can only find them by looking at all the moving parts.
Yeah, thanks, Mrs. Fuchs. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
A lot to think about on that one.
Yeah, I think this would be a perfect application for those quantum computers.
Oh, because the celestial navigator?
Yes, because that's what Google was saying. They could apply it to American Airlines or FedEx and try to figure out what's the most efficient, fastest way to move people or packages across the country based on other packages. And a quantum computer could figure it out in seconds, which a normal computer would take a long, long time.
Yeah.
So,
like the routing of all the virus vaccines right now, the Pfizer vaccine.
Well, yeah, the way that they're talking about using this information, for instance, in the vicinity of Earth, they can use it to control asteroid and meteorite encounters, or they can investigate how manifolds will be impacting satellites and other man-made objects around the Earth. You know, you can put them in the L1 and the L2 zone, which is the areas that are defined by the mass of the Earth and the Moon.
Yeah.
And if you get an object into that particular orbit, then it's always falling towards Earth. It doesn't need any fuel. Right? It's just always being propelled by the gravity of the Earth and the Moon and their relation to each other.
Yeah, yeah. It's like you're getting energy from the environment. It's like windsurfing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, catching the gravity waves.
Yeah, I like it. You just have to know where to catch the wave.
Right.
Right.
And that's where the navigator comes in handy.
Right.
And if you miss a wave, don't worry about it. There'll be another one.
Yeah.
Exactly.
If you want to know more about this, check out our links page. We have an article called Scientists Discover a Superhighway Network to Travel the Solar System. There is a new type of life. It's not a cyborg. It's not a combination of biology with technology. It's pure biology, but yet still part robot. A biological robot called Xenobots, X-E-N-O bots. First robots made entirely from living cells.
Ooh, that sounds like a dangerous threshold.
It's like they're not
Terminator.
They're not alien material. They're like DNA material. So there's been some experiments along those lines. The first xenobots were made from African clawed frogs. Xenopus levis, Z-E-N-O-P-U-S, L-A-E-V-I-S, Xenopus. And they went from xenopus to xenobots with some amphibian upgrades made from embryonic skin and heart cells. They created a robotic device made out of the heart cells. And it's not fully nature anymore. It's something humans have made out of parts of animals, xenobots.
This sounds very Frankenstein.
Well, it is. It's kind of in the, but you see, that's always the edge of when we're figuring out how to create stuff and whether or not it's a good idea. There's a lot of cautionary tales in that arena. And it is kind of playing.
Well, but the thing that's different is that, you know, Frankenstein literally went out and got dead body parts. These are designed on a supercomputer.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. They're a little more sculpted, you know. Tiny forceps, little cauterizing irons, very much more precise. And we can get very interesting programming behavior to this. You can create things that just swim or just kick.
And they're created in petri dishes, right?
Yeah.
It's sort of like growing stem cells with a particular little design.
They can be used for delivering drugs in the human body. They can be xenobot couriers, the FedEx of the bloodstream.
Hmm.
They can be very small, dedicated to being a little living biological craft that carry a cargo.
This is how we start the fantastic voyage, right? We get down into the bloodstream and send our own little spaceships.
Yeah, and you're dealing with the not being rejected because you're not a biological organism thing too. So it gets more accepted by biology when you use biology to help itself get better. Anyway, enough said. Let's go to space for the next hour.
No, that was fascinating.
Yeah, it is. It's a fascinating area to think about, I must say.
All right.
Thank you.
Xenobots in our future.
Yeah. So Mrs. Future is fascinated with male interest in controlling biology. It's just... What are these guys thinking? That's another cap. That's, you know, I don't know. What are we thinking?
Well,